for. We're among one of America's oldest state Republican parties. We were founded in 1855. I'm told Frederick Douglass was a precinct captain. And we've been at it for quite a while. We have a federal role, and then we also have a bit of a local role as well. And so at the federal level, well, we send three members, myself and two others, to represent D.C. at the Republican National Committee, three voting members. And then, of course, we have 19 voting delegates at the Republican National Convention. And I'll get back to that in 1 second. We also have a distinctly local role in the District of Columbia. Now, I got involved back in 2008 because I was fired up about parental choice in education. So I ran against someone who wasn't as pro-parental choice in education. And so I ran for D.C. Council. Long story, didn't work out so well, but it did work out so well. 2 years later, fast forward, I ran for D.C. State Board of Ed, and I won on a pure parental choice in education platform. So I was fired up about that issue. But, you know, there are some other issues. And right now, I'm sure you're well aware, we have a public safety issue in D.C. We have a crime crisis in the District of Columbia. And for whatever reason, most of our elected officials are unwilling to admit it. And so I would encourage you to become involved with the D.C. Republican Party at some point to help us with this. Now, just yesterday, all of the members of the leading trade associations, the national trade associations, they wrote to the mayor and the 13 extremely liberal members of the D.C. Council, most of whom who sought to decrease police numbers, to defund the police budget, wrote all of these trade associations, Chamber of Commerce, dozens and dozens, asking them to fix this crime problem in the District of Columbia. It's a complete mess. People are not coming into the city. Their workers don't want to go to work. It's not safe anywhere. You can get carjacked anywhere in D.C. now. It's not in some in that part of the city where this is happening. It's all over the place. And so I would encourage you to step up and do something about it. There's a few things you could do. Number one, you could be active and engaged with our party. Number two, you could support our candidates. Next door, we have petitions assigned for candidates. We also have, there's a couple of recalls underway of some not very pro-public safety police officers. We have one for Ward 6 next door. If you're Ward 6, a Republican registered Ward 6, we encourage you to sign that. It's really important that we get involved because you can either sit at home and just complain, and frankly sit at home because it's not very safe out there, and or you can do something about it. The other thing I want to mention is you want to consider running for office. So we have these things called advisory neighborhood commissions, extremely hyper-local. Would encourage you to run for those positions. Those petitions will come up later in the year. We have the D.C. State Board of Education. If I can get elected, you can get elected. So if you're interested, you're passionate about education issues, consider that. And then, of course, D.C. council races. So I'd really strongly encourage you, if you've never thought about this before, to get involved. Getting back to our 19 delegates, this has been a great process. Believe it or not, we have had five presidential candidates visit us. When the cycle started up, I said to every single campaign, you know, we'd love to have you at come to an event with us in the primary. We'd love for you to come do an event with us when we do our big dinner. And then we'd love you to come visit us over the weekend of our primary. And so this invitation has been made to all presidential candidates. We've had five so far. As it turns out, we have our sixth candidate today, as you may know. And so I am extremely pleased to introduce a governor who you may know, whose sign you may be holding. Governor Haley is a native-born South Carolinian. She was born in a rural small town. She's the daughter of immigrants. Governor Haley was elected governor at only age 38, which you have to consider, that's like me being elected mayor of D.C. at age 15. That doesn't seem easy to do in South Carolina. She served two terms. During that period of time, she led a record-breaking economic expansion of the state, 15-year unemployment lows. And then, of course, as you all know, she was an ambassador to the United Nations. She cut her international teeth there. She is the she's married. Her husband is serving overseas in the South Carolina National Guard. And then by all accounts, she has two fantastic adult children who appear to be doing quite well. And you know, when you have two fantastic adult children who are doing well, you have won the parent lottery, which may be the greatest thing of all. So ladies and gentlemen, I am honored and privileged to introduce Governor Nikki Haley.
And who says there are no Republicans in D.C.? Come on. It's great to be with all of you. You know, I want to thank Patrick. Everybody, when you see him, please wish him a happy birthday. It's Patrick's birthday today. So thank you for coming out. We wanted to get a chance to see you. We are running the tape. We're trying to make sure that we touch every hand that we can and speak to every person, because you don't have to turn on the news to see how tough things are. We're $34 trillion in debt. We're having to borrow money just to make our interest payments. China owns some of that debt. And I would love to tell you that Joe Biden did that to us. But I have always spoken in hard truths, and I'm going to do that with you today. Donald Trump and our Republicans did that to us too. You go back and look at that $2.2 trillion COVID stimulus bill that they passed with no accountability, that expanded welfare, that now, hey, Eli, that has now given us 80 million Americans on Medicaid, 42 million Americans on food stamps. That's a third of our country. And did Republicans try and make it right? Nope. They followed the tone of Trump and expanded out and opened up earmarks and pet projects for the first time in 10 years, pushing through 7,000 of them last year. Now, in the 2024 appropriations budget, Republicans put in $7.4 billion worth of pet projects and earmarks. Democrats put in $2.8 billion. Now you tell me who the big spenders are. All while one in six American families can't afford their utility bill. 60% of Americans are living paycheck to paycheck. 50% of American families can't afford diapers. Something's got to give. Don't you think it's finally time we had an accountant in the White House? So how do we fix the economy? The first thing we do is we start by clawing back the $100 billion of unspent COVID dollars that are still sitting out there. Instead of 87,000 IRS agents going after middle America, we should go after the hundreds of billions of dollars of COVID fraud. One out of every $7 was spent fraudulently. If 8% of our budget is interest, quit borrowing. Cut up the credit cards. You have to balance a budget every day. I had to balance a budget as governor. Why is Congress the only group that refuses to balance a budget? We'll stop the spending, we'll stop the borrowing, we'll eliminate their pet projects, and I'll veto any spending bill that doesn't take us back to pre-COVID levels. That will save us trillions. And then we're going to take as many federal programs as we can and send it down to the state levels. That will dramatically reduce the size of the federal government, but it will empower people on the ground. Think education, think healthcare, think welfare, think mental health. If we cut the strings and send the resources down, then you can cater it where it's closest to the people instead of having Washington bureaucrats handle that. And then we have to open up the middle class. We're watching the rich get richer and the poor get poorer. We need to open up the middle class by cutting taxes for the middle class and simplifying the brackets. We'll eliminate the federal gas and diesel tax in this country, and we will make small business tax cuts permanent. Small businesses are the heartbeat of our economy. We need to start acting like it. Now, in talking about Congress, Congress has one job, just one job, and that's to give us a budget on time. I don't know if you turned on the TV this week, but they're having a deadlock again. But what I'll tell you is, if that's their one job, do you know they've only given us a budget on time four times in 40 years? Four times in 40 years. You know what I say about that? When I'm president, they don't give us a budget on time, they don't get paid, period. Don't you think it's finally time we had term limits in Washington, D.C.? Don't you think we need to have mental competency tests for anyone over the age of 75? Now, I want to be clear about this. I'm not being disrespectful when I say that. We all know people over 75 that can run circles around us. And then we know Joe Biden. Congress has become the most privileged nursing home in the country. These are people making decisions on the future of our economy. These are people making decisions on our national security. We need to know they're at the top of their game. This isn't something to play with. And now let's talk about the border. I can't believe this is happening in the United States of America. 9 million illegal immigrants have come across that border. We've had enough fentanyl cross the border that would kill every single American. Number one cause of death for adults 18 to 45, fentanyl. And don't think for a second China doesn't know what they're doing when they send it over. Now, when I was governor of South Carolina, we passed the toughest illegal immigration law in the country. President Obama sued us over it, and we won. We want to take what we did in South Carolina and go national with it. We'll do a national E-Verify program where every business has to prove that the people they hire are in this country legally. We will defund sanctuary cities once and for all. No more safe havens in America. We'll put 25,000 Border Patrol and ICE agents on the ground and let them do their job. We'll go back to the Remain in Mexico policy so that no one even steps foot on U.S. soil. And instead of catch and release, we'll go to catch and deport. That is how you stop what's happening on the border. Now, if you look, a week ago, 2 weeks ago, we had the opportunity to do something about the border. Congress put forward a bill, and the good part of the bill was it strengthened asylum laws. We have got to do that. 3 million illegals came in under the Trump administration because our asylum laws weren't strong enough. The weak part of the bill was it didn't have Remain in Mexico, which we have to have, and it had a 5,000-person threshold. We shouldn't even allow one-person threshold. But look at what happened. Instead of Congress going in, making it stronger, and getting us something out, Donald Trump went and told them, don't pass anything until after the general election because it would hurt him. We can't wait one more day for them to pass a strong border bill. We've got to secure the border, and we've got to secure it now. Congress needs to get in a room, do their job, strengthen that law, get it out, and Trump needs to stay out of it altogether and let us move on. And then, you know, growing up in rural South Carolina, my mom always taught us, you take care of those who take care of you. But I'm going to ask you if we're taking care of those who take care of us. Right now in America, 35,000 of our veterans are homeless. One in three suffers from PTSD or thoughts of suicide. We lose 22 heroes a day to suicide. If a veteran needs a doctor's appointment at the VA, on average, it takes them 29 days. Why 29 days? Because on the 30th day, they can go to the doctor or hospital of their choice. So midway through the 29 days, they get a call to reschedule. And the clock starts all over again. It is shameful how we treat our veterans. Now, I'm the proud wife of a combat veteran who served in Afghanistan. And when Michael came home to us, that was a lot of prayers answered. But that was the easy part. When we got home, life got hard. Michael couldn't hear loud noises. He couldn't be in crowds. Life had passed him by for the year that he was gone, and the transition was tough. We can't just love our men and women when they're gone. We gotta love them when they come back home, too. Let's do better than just a two-week transition. Let's take care of them for the long haul. That's why we need to have telehealth and let them get the mental health care they need right when they need it. They should be able to go to the doctor or hospital of their choice. They've earned that right. And I think the best way we take care of VA health care, I think every member of Congress should have to get their health care from the VA, and you watch how fast that gets fixed. It'll be the best health care you've ever seen, guaranteed. And speaking of military, let's talk about national security. The world is on fire, literally. We've got a war in Europe. We've got a war in the Middle East. We've got North Korea testing intercontinental ballistic missiles capable of hitting the U.S. You've got China doing cyber attacks on our infrastructure. And now you have Russia blinding satellites. So we can't see what they're trying to do. But make no mistake, none of this would have happened had we not had that debacle in Afghanistan. The idea that Michael and his military brothers and sisters who served there had to watch us leave Bagram Air Force Base in the middle of the night without telling our allies who stood shoulder to shoulder with us for decades because we asked them to be there. Think about what that said to our friends. More importantly, think about what that said to our enemies. And now you've got a Congress saying, do you support Ukraine and Israel? Or do you support closing the border? They are completely lying to you when they say that. That's a false premise. Now is the time, more than ever, that we have to have a leader with moral clarity. We need a leader that knows the difference between right and wrong and good and bad. We need a leader that understands that their total job is to prevent war and to make sure they keep Americans safe. And to be honest with the American people about exactly what's happening. We need to understand that, no, I don't think we should give cash to any country, friend or enemy, because you can't follow it, you can't hold it accountable. But we should never have a situation where America is so arrogant to think we don't need friends. America needed a lot of friends after 9/11. And we should know that when Putin says that once he takes Ukraine, Poland and the Baltics are next, he means it. And Poland and the Baltics are NATO countries, and if that happens, that puts us at war. We are trying to prevent war. That's the key in all of this, is preventing war. And so as you look at the situation, what did Donald Trump say 2 weeks ago in South Carolina? He said that he would stand with Putin and encourage him to invade our allies. Think about that. Trump would side with a thug where 500,000 people have been wounded or killed because Putin invaded Ukraine. Trump would side with a dictator who kills his political opponents. Trump would side with a tyrant who arrests American journalists and holds them hostage. Trump's going to side with a madman who's made no bones about the fact he wants to destroy America. And he's going to side with him over the allies that stood with us after 9/11? Think about that's pushing us more into war. In that one moment, he made our allies more vulnerable. He emboldened Putin. And he put our military men and women who were serving there at risk. We can't have that. So we know what we need to do with national security. We know what we need to do with domestic policy. Now what do we do with our politics? Because that's the real question. When I started the race, I announced over a year ago, we had 14 people in the race. I defeated a dozen of the fellas. I just have one more I've got to catch up to. And look at just the past few months. They said we wouldn't make it to Iowa. We came within 1% of second place. Then they said we were down 30 points in New Hampshire, and we came in at 43%. Now, I don't know if you saw election night in New Hampshire, but Donald Trump was completely unhinged on stage. He went on about revenge and my dress. The next day, he said anyone who supports her is barred permanently from MAGA. We had fun with that, so we had T-shirts made that said barred permanently. We got some great models here. We sold over 25,000 T-shirts like that. I mean, it was just amazing. But think about what that said. If you're going to say something like that, if you're a candidate for president, your job is to bring people in, not push people out of your club. And then the next day, he went and tried to push the RNC to name him the presumptive nominee. We don't anoint kings in America. We have elections. And everybody has the right to decide how they want to use the power of their voice. And we need to do that. Then he lost a couple of court cases and had some judgments against him, and he went on a rant about how he was a victim. The problem with all of this, whether it was the night of New Hampshire, whether it's after these court cases, at no point is he ever talking about the American people. At no point is he talking about the fact that we're $34 trillion in debt. At no point is he talking about the fact that only 31% of eighth graders in our country are proficient in reading. At no point is he talking about all of the problems with the border and the fact that we have to get it done now. At no point is he talking about lawlessness in our cities. And at no point is he talking about the wars around the world. All he's doing is talking about himself. And that's the problem. It's not about him. It's about the American people. And so this goes back to the fact that it's also about the Republican Party. Because the Republican Party I love is one that believes in fiscal responsibility, in reducing the size of government, in empowering people. But what did Donald Trump do? He put us $8 trillion in debt in just 4 years, more than any other president. He didn't shrink government, he grew government. He rails against it, but he grew it. He didn't clean it up, he didn't take the politics out, he didn't do anything to reduce the size. He grew it, and we're paying for that. Then you go and you look at the fact that our national security used to be peace through strength. Growing our alliances, growing our friendships to intimidate our enemies. And now he's walking away from all of that, thinking that America doesn't need friends, thinking that he can get weak in the knees with enemies. We can't do that. That's basically an equation for war. And then you go look at the RNC apparatus itself. The RNC was always about winning seats up and down the ticket. Now, before the primary is over, Donald Trump has gone and taken the RNC. He's putting his daughter-in-law at the head of it. He's having his campaign manager run it. And they've made it very clear that now the RNC is just about Donald Trump. Now, he spent $60 million in campaign contributions on his own personal court cases. If this happens, all of a sudden, the the RNC is going to be his legal slush fund. I mean, slush fund. That's what he's going to have. It's going to be all for his personal court cases. I know, slush fund, I know. I barely know what city I'm in right now, so I'll just say it. But, you know, you look at that, and first of all, I will tell you that there's been a resolution that's been put down at the RNC that none of the money can be used towards his legal fees. He pitched a fit about that. I have said to the reporters and to everybody that will listen, that vote needs to be on the record. We need to know how everybody votes on this. Our committeemen, every state's committeemen, we need to see that vote on the record. I want to know who's okay with paying his legal fees and who's not. And you deserve to know who says that and who doesn't. So this is a story of, do we want more of the same? Or do we want to go in a new direction?
He cannot win a general election.
Right? He can't.
It is madness.
If you go and look at what Republicans are dealing with, honestly, I was in Michigan. In 2012, Michigan was a bright light. They were winning seats up and down the ticket. They passed right to work. They were doing amazing. Since Donald Trump became president, they lost the governor's mansion. They lost the state house. They lost the state senate. From Michigan, I went to Minnesota. The exact same thing. From Minnesota, I went to Colorado. No Republican has gotten over 45% statewide since Donald Trump became president. We lost in 2018. We lost in 2020. We lost in 2022. But look at a couple weeks ago. Republicans lost the vote on Israel. Republicans lost the vote on Mayorkas. The RNC chair lost her job. And Donald Trump had his fingerprints in all of it. How many more times do we have to lose before we start to say maybe Donald Trump is the problem? Yeah. And don't take it from me. Look at the polls. In the polls on his best day, it's margin of error. In Marquette poll, same thing last week, margin of error. I am in those exact same polls. I defeat Joe Biden by 18 points. Do you know what that means? That means it's bigger than the presidency. That's House, that's Senate, that's governorships, that's school boards. But more than that, you win by double digits. That's a mandate going into D.C. to stop the wasteful spending and get our economy back on track. That's a mandate to get our kids reading again and go back to the basics in education. That's a mandate to secure our borders with no more excuses. That's a mandate for law and order back in our cities, and that's a mandate for a strong America that prevents wars that we can all be proud of. Don't you want that? Yes. Because we could have that, but in order to have that, it takes a lot of courage. Courage from everybody here today. Courage for me to run, and courage for every one of you to know. Don't complain about what happens in a general election if you don't vote in this primary. It matters. You know, 8 months ago, I dropped my husband off at 4 a.m. for another year-long deployment. And I watched him and 230 soldiers pick up their two duffel bags of belongings to go to a country they'd never been. All in the name of protecting America. They're willing to sacrifice their lives and their families because they still believe in this amazing experiment that is America. So if they're willing to sacrifice for us there, shouldn't we be willing to fight for America here? Because we have a country to save. And this is, you know, everybody's like, why is she running? Why does she keep doing this? The reason I'm doing this, I mean, I think I've made it pretty clear I'm not trying to be vice president. No. I think I've made it pretty clear this is not about my political future, or I would have been out a long time ago. The reason I'm doing this is for my kids and your kids and the younger generation. Look at what they've been through. Look at what they've been through. If you look at, they went through COVID, which was traumatic. They see the $34 trillion in debt. They understand they have to be responsible for it in some way. They don't know how they're going to get a job. They don't know how they're going to pay their bills. They don't think they're ever going to own a home. And they worry about wars coming out. And all of that is under the tent of America of anger and division and hate. And then we want to know, why is there so much stress, anxiety, and depression? What do we expect? They deserve to know what normal feels like. There is nothing normal under Joe Biden where you have millions of illegal immigrants coming across the border and nobody's stopping it. There's nothing normal under Joe Biden where he's focused more on gender pronouns than he is on whether the kids can read them. There's nothing normal under Joe Biden to have these wars around the world. But there's nothing normal under Donald Trump where he mocks members of the military. There's nothing normal under Trump where he takes the side of a dictator over our allies. There's nothing normal about Donald Trump where he uses campaign contributions for personal court cases. And then you look at the fact Joe Biden's calling his opponents fascists and Donald Trump's calling his opponents vermin. None of that is normal. None of it. So now, what do we do about it? We fight. We get loud. We get our friends. We get our family. You have an election. I can't believe this is the only place you can vote. So y'all are not to leave until you vote today. But don't just do that. Go get your friends. Go get your family. You'd be shocked at how many of them are just general election voters. But I want you to send them a message from me. In a general election, we're given a choice. In a primary, we make our choice. This is the time we need to make our voices heard. This is the time we need to go in a new direction with a new generational leader that can put in 8 years, day and night, no negativity, no drama, no vendettas, just hardcore results for the American people. It's time. You know, when I first announced, they asked me what my motivations were for doing this. And I said, my parents came here 50 years ago to an America that was strong and proud and full of opportunities. I want them to know that country again. I'm doing this for Michael and his military brothers and sisters. They need to know their sacrifice matters. They need to know that we love our country. I'm doing this for my daughter who just got married, and I saw how hard it was for her and her husband to buy a home. The average home buyer in America now is 49 years old. The American dream is leaving them. And I'm doing this for my son, who's a senior in college, and I am tired of watching him write papers of things he doesn't believe in just to get an A. That's not us. That's not America. And for the first time, 81% of Americans don't think their kids are going to live as good of a life as we did. We can't be okay with that. I'm not okay with that. We do have a country to save. Can you imagine a country where we could sit down at the dinner table and not have a political fight? Can you imagine a country where you could go to work and say what you think and not worry about being demoted? Can you imagine a country where we could strongly disagree and not hate each other over it? That's where we want to go. So if you like what I've had to say, go tell 10 people. Bring them here today, tomorrow, whatever day after that, 3 days. You've got 3 days. I don't know what day is. and get them here and tell them to vote. Because we can do this. We don't have to live the way we're living now. But we need to be part of the solution. So send everybody to NikkiHaley.com. Let them know that they can have their voices heard. We're going to fight for Super Tuesday. Go out and get them. God bless you. Thank you very much. Thank you. Thanks so much. God bless.